from WNYC New York Public Radio. This is the podcast of The Leonard Lopate Show. This is just one segment of the program. You can hear all Leonard's interviews on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
The subject for today's edition of our Friday series, Please Explain, was suggested by Cheryl Helm, a listener who asked the following question. By taking vitamin and mineral supplements, are we helping our health at all or just creating very expensive urine? Well, I'm joined by two experts in the field, Dr. David Talmadge, the director of the Masters of Science program and postdoctoral training in human nutrition at Columbia University's Institute for Human Nutrition, and Dr. Wahida Kamali, a registered dietitian and the director of nutrition in the Irving Center for Clinical Research at Columbia University. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Talmadge, to begin at the beginning, what do we mean when we say vitamins and minerals?
So vitamins are organic compounds, which means that they're compounds that are made by living organisms that we require to function, for our cells to function, for life, essentially.
When you say living organisms, you mean it could be plants and it could be other animals?
Plants or bacteria or other animals, but they're compounds that we ourselves cannot synthesize from precursors, from carbon dioxide or water or nitrogen. So we have to take them in through the diet. In contrast, minerals are elements. They're things like iron or zinc or sodium that are not organic, not derived from organic material.
So, but not all minerals, obviously, are to be, not all minerals are good for humans, only certain minerals.
No, since some are really quite toxic for
humans. We also wouldn't want to eat uranium or...
Right. So...
Lead.
Right. So many are really quite toxic, and so that it's not that all minerals are good for you or even necessary, but there are a handful that are absolutely essential for the way our bodies work.
Why do we call them micronutrients?
The micro is in distinction to macronutrients, and it reflects the amounts you need on a daily basis to take in. So macronutrients typically refer to fat and protein and carbohydrates that you use largely derive energy, in which you need about a pound a day of digestible material. Micronutrients you need in much, much smaller quantities, a thousandth or even a 10,000th of that amount, depending upon the specific micronutrient. So you need only little bits of them, but you need them on a constant basis for the most part, on a daily basis.
So to be called a vitamin, it has to be essential, you say, be required in very small amounts, and not be able to be synthesized by the human body.
That's correct. There are a couple other criteria one would typically apply. So classically, the vitamins have been associated with specific pathologies if you don't have them. So the disease states like scurvy or rickets are very well defined, and there's characteristic symptoms associated with them that are cured by reintroducing the specific vitamin that is needed in the diet.
Now, vitamins are organic. Minerals are inorganic. We also need them only in small quantities?
There's a pretty wide range, so things like sodium, chloride, calcium, phosphorus, potassium are sort of on the high end, where you need about roughly a gram a day. On the low end are the ultra trace minerals, where you need maybe 10,000, 100,000 of that a day, very small amounts. And then there's minerals like iron and zinc that are sort of intermediate in terms of requirements.
So, Dr. Kamali, we have found out what they are, vitamins and minerals, but what do they do exactly?
Well, they don't work alone, but they are key to every process that takes place in your body. And so they work in close partnership with other nutrients to make things happen. So when you think of, getting energy, they really work with carbohydrates and proteins and fats to make the energy. So you need them, but you need them in small amounts. And it's also important to know that though you need them in small amounts, it doesn't mean that taking more of it is better. And what supplements do are really meant to supplement. They're not to replace food. So when you're thinking of making a healthy meal plan for yourself, you have to concentrate in looking at foods and looking at a whole bunch of plant foods, particularly fruits and vegetables and whole grains, to give you all these nutrients, the vitamins and the minerals.
You say that they can't replace eating healthy foods, but what happens when we use the vitamin supplements? Are they functioning the same way as the vitamins and minerals that we're getting out of foods?
They do function the same way, but it's just that you cannot capture all the qualities, all the nutrients that you find in food. So nutrients act in synergy. So you cannot put them in a capsule or a tablet, all the nutrients that are important to promote health. So although individual nutrients, say for instance you need extra calcium, the calcium supplement will do the same thing. But it also requires other nutrients to act. For instance, calcium would need vitamin D for its absorption. So you can't have them in isolation and have the rest of the diet very poorly planned because you're not going to get the benefit.
Dr. Talmadge, what's happening on a molecular level when vitamins or minerals are at work? For example, what does it look like when vitamin C is doing one of the jobs it's supposed to do?
Well, vitamin C, as an example, it participates in what are called oxidation-reduction reactions. These are biochemical reactions in which oxygen is basically added or taken away from other molecules that helps break them down or to build things up. And for the example of severe vitamin C deficiency or scurvy, what's happened is you have bleeding and edema and your gums bleed, your bones get weak, and you have fatigue. And these are all directly related to a failure to make strong connective tissue that lines your blood vessels to make strong bones, because the enzymes, those proteins that are involved in synthesizing this structural matrix in the body, require vitamin C to keep working. And so you take it away, and basically your structural parts of the body begin to become compromised.
But if you don't get enough, if you get too much vitamin C, then you have other problems, don't you?
Well, it's not clear that you can get too much vitamin C.
Well, I've gotten
C.
bumps on my arms.
It's difficult in the sense because the body actually protects itself. Vitamin C is one we know quite a bit about, in fact, in terms of absorption and excretion in the urine and turnover rates. And so it's difficult to actually accumulate too much vitamin C. But that's the other lesson there is, because the body protects itself, megadose supplements are really a waste.
So when people get a cold, Dr. Kamali, and start popping all those vitamin C, those chewable pills, are they just wasting a lot of money?
Yes, there's really no indication that it's going to prevent a cold, but it may decrease the severity of a cold a little bit, cut short by a couple of days, but even that's not very clear. So yes, you will be excreting the vitamin C, so you would not only make an expensive urine, but also a very nutritious one.
Mm.
You, at the same time, you know, people who do take a lot of vitamin C, it's an acid. So if people have any GI distress, you know, it's extra acidity in the stomach, so it can cause some problems. It can also, you know, there are cases reported with increased vitamin C intake can cause kidney stones. So there have been problems reported, so it's not without any problems. And again, you know, all we need is a small amount, and if you're going to exceed that, it is a wasted amount, and it can have some side effects.
My guests on Please Explain today on the Leonard Lopate Show here on WNYC 93.9 AM 820, online at WNYC.org, are Dr. Wahida Kamali and Dr. David Talmadge, and we are talking about what vitamins and minerals are and how they work. I found it interesting, Dr. Talmadge, that although humans can't manufacture their own vitamin C, many animals can. We have any idea of why it didn't? We didn't wind up with that ability.
My guess is we lost it at some point during the evolution of primates.
I want it back,
and it'd be nice. Mm-hmm. It's actually made as a byproduct of another pathway, and it's a pathway humans don't utilize, and so we've lost the byproduct, but we haven't lost the requirement for it.
Well, let's talk about the vitamins and the minerals. We have vitamin A, 5 Bs, C, D, E, and then we skip to K. Because of Special K, is that a Kellogg thing, or is that something that has to do with somebody just deciding to use
a letter? Have D and E as well.
Yes, and the K is actually from the German. It was a coagulation factor, and so coagulation in German starts with a K.
And so minerals, sodium, potassium, calcium, calcium phosphate, copper, iron, zinc, magnesium, manganese, selenium, and cobalt. Those are the ones that we need mostly?
We need iron as well.
Or iron, right.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Kermali, what is a fat-soluble vitamin as opposed to a water-soluble vitamin? We've been talking about water-soluble vitamins.
Yeah, so the vitamins belong to two groups, the water-soluble and the fat-soluble. So as the name implies, water-soluble vitamins dissolve in water, and they're carried in your bloodstream. And for the most part, they're not stored in your body, at least not in significant amounts. And the fat-soluble vitamins, they're carried also in your bloodstream and throughout your body, attached to body and these chemicals made with lipids. So the four vitamins that you mentioned, A, D, and K, are fat-soluble.
And since they don't dissolve in water and stored in the body for long periods, they are vitamins we can overdose on, we can take too many of?
That's correct. Absolutely. We can certainly, if we have toxicities have been reported with excessive intake for long periods of time of vitamin A, D. So it's really important that we watch what we're eating, particularly when we find so many fortified foods around, and so there is a tendency to overdose, or if you think it's vitamin A is good for your skin, so people who really want to do something and maybe they're going to overdose and actually can be quite toxic. And particularly women who are of childbearing age and pregnant women, it's particularly dangerous for them because it can also cause birth defects.
And just to add to that, Wahida, that the difference in amount between what you need of vitamin A and when it starts to become toxic isn't actually all that great. It's only about a threefold levels above what you need if you take them chronically.
And what does A do for us?
A is essential for the development and the health and homeostasis maintenance of most tissues in the body. It actually functionally behaves like a hormone, with the exception that it's also what allows us to see. So one of the metabolites of vitamin A is the thing in your eye that actually senses light. But for the rest of the body, vitamin A functions much like estrogen or progesterone in terms of regulating biological processes.
Now, we mentioned vitamin E is also fat-soluble. And over the years, I've heard so many conflicting reports on whether it had any value or not. Dr. Kermali, what do you think?
Yeah, we don't have a case to give large amounts of vitamin E as a supplement, but we do need a certain amount of it, and we can easily get those from foods, and we do need it. It is an antioxidant, so it's important to get enough vitamin E. And oils and fats have vitamin E in them, nuts have vitamin E, so you can have a very nice diet, including nuts, to give you enough vitamin E.
Now, sometimes in the morning when I'm running late, I'll just wash down a vitamin supplement with some orange juice or maybe some black coffee. Is that okay?
Absolutely not. At least, because as I had said earlier, the vitamins and minerals don't work alone. So you need other foods for things to happen, because they are just regulators, they're coenzymes, and they need to partner with other nutrients. So if you're just going to pop in a pill and have a cup of black coffee, it's wasted.
Are supplements important for certain populations more than others?
There is a place for supplements, and people who need extra calcium, who need extra vitamin D, or people who are anemic and need iron, Yes, there is a place for supplementation, but it should be done in consultation with your physician. And because some of these nutrients, they may appear to be so important, like say, for instance, vitamin E. Loads of people take them, but if you're on certain medications, like blood thinning medications, like Coumadin, you have to really consult your physician before you take the vitamin E supplement. Also, taking mega doses of calcium, you know, you do need calcium to bone up, but because there's so many fortified foods with calcium, and people take those and also take supplements, they can really run into trouble. It can have an effect on your kidneys. So if a little is good, a lot is not better.
Isn't it also a problem with pregnant women? For a while, they told women to take more calcium when they were pregnant, and then they discovered that too much calcium can cause real problems with the fetus.
Yes, as every nutrient, there is an upper limit beyond which we shouldn't go, and the amount you take has to be monitored.
Now, Dr. Talmadge, why does vitamin A have a bad effect on... Why is it so dangerous? Is it because it's stored in the liver?
Well, there's the aspect if it does... we're very efficient at storing it, so we can accumulate large amounts of it. And it's also a function of what it does. And because it regulates these processes, basically maintaining homeostasis of various tissues, that puts you in a position where too much, doing what it would normally do, but doing too much of it can have a negative effect in largely in the same target tissues of not having enough, but just sort of in the other direction. And so it's both a combination of the ability to store it and store it to the point where if you have really massive doses stored in the liver, you can have liver damage, but also in terms of where it's functioning throughout the body, there's a balance between too much and too little.
We'll be taking calls in a few minutes. Our number here is 212-267-WNYC. That's area code 212-267-9692. Just let me, before we go to a break, ask you about some of the minerals. Iodine is a real need that we have, and for a long time it was a real problem until iodized salts were developed. Has that really solved the problem of iodine deficiency?
It has in places where iodized salt is readily available and is handled properly. And so iodine, if left out on the countertop in the sunlight, will basically evaporate and will leave salt or leave other things. But salt, iodized salt in a closed container in the cabinet, it was a nice source of iodine. It's also added in various foods and processes.
Why do we need that? Why don't we just get it through natural sources?
Well, because of its high water solubility and because it can evaporate, although it's in the soil, once you plow the soil and it's exposed to the sunlight and air, it'll actually evaporate or it'll run off into groundwaters and basically ultimately end up in the ocean, which is the largest storage pool of iodine. So seafood and seaweed are very rich sources of it in terms of food intake.
And a lot of people don't eat fish.
And so iodine deficiency, people are... Without iodized salt, people who live away from oceans are actually very much at risk.
Dr. Kamali, I understand that in cultures where tea is drunk a lot, there may be iron deficiency.
Well, I think it's important to look at just not at tea, but what else is in the diet. And that's important to look at. It's not that... It may be an association because maybe the diets are also poor in those areas.
Well, Dr. Talmadge, I know you study tea and iron.
Well, I study and teach it more than... But there are places where if iron is deficient in the diet and people are at risk, particularly if the sources of iron are not from animal sources, what's called heme iron, but more... non-heme iron, what you get in a supplement, the absorption of that is very poor and its solubility is poor. And there are interactions with foods. Tea is an example of that where you decrease its solubility and so it makes it harder to absorb the little bit you do get in the diet.
Why do we hear that women need iron more than men? And why is iron so constipating for some people?
You want to take that one, Wahida?
Women who are... menstruating, they would need enough iron, particularly to make sure they have enough to replenish the stores.
Otherwise, they can become anemic?
If the whole, it's not just iron alone. You have to have all the other nutrients as well. So a poorly constructed diet is going to get them into trouble. So iron also has to be looked at. And what the surveys are showing is young women particularly have diets that are lacking in iron and zinc. So there are quite a few nutrients that we as in general, depending on which stage of your life cycle you're in, can be deficient in certain nutrients. And this is what our surveys are telling us.
Well, just one more thing before we go to a break. Why do people report that iron is constipating? What is the interaction that leads to that?
Well, I'm not very clear if it happens to everybody. Not all my patients complain about that. But what I tell them is to get more fiber into the diet to make sure they get enough bulk so that they're not constipated.
We'll take a little break and we'll come back with my guest, Dr. Wahida Kamali, a registered dietitian and director of nutrition in the Irving Center for Clinical Research at Columbia University, and Dr. David Talmadge, the director of the Masters of Science program and postdoctoral training in human nutrition at Columbia University's Institute for Human Nutrition. Stay with us. And on today's Please Explain, we're talking about what vitamins and minerals are and how they work, and taking your calls at 212-267-WNYC to get further into that. My guests here are Dr. David Talmadge, Director of the Masters of Science Program and Postdoctoral Training in Human Nutrition at Columbia University's Institute for Human Nutrition, and Dr. Wahida Kamali, who is a registered dietitian and director of nutrition in the Irving Center for Clinical Research at Columbia University. And let's go right to those calls. Olivia from the Bronx, you're on New York Public Radio.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I love your show. I have questions about potassium, two questions. My mother-in-law takes a heart medication and was told to eat a banana every morning to get enough potassium, and I'm wondering what the medication does that you need to have extra potassium. And also, I've heard of people going to the hospital, maybe mainly older people, with severe symptoms, and it turns out they just had too little potassium in their bloodstream. So,
which one of you wants to take that?
Either.
Okay, you want me to take it, David?
Certainly the heart medication part, because I don't know the answer.
Okay. Potassium is an important nutrient. In fact, it's we have shown, we've seen in studies like the DASH trial, the dietary approaches to stop hypertension, that a diet that has lots of fruits and vegetables, which give other nutrients in addition to potassium, is very important. So we do need potassium, and we know that when enough potassium is given, it's associated with better blood pressure management. And so certain medications like diuretic can cause low levels of potassium in the blood, and that's why your doctor will say include maybe orange juice or have a banana to get enough potassium in the diet, because if you don't get, the low levels can cause problems of muscle weakness or loss of appetite. So it is important that people get enough potassium.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for calling us. Paul from Connecticut, you're on the yep. Leonard Lopate Show. Hi.
Good afternoon. How are you guys doing? My question was, how does the body regulate the intake? There must be a natural mechanism for the body's demand for if there's a deficit. How does the body? I know salt's pretty straightforward, but
you mean do we have suddenly I'll think I really want a glass of orange juice right now? Does that mean that I need some vitamin C?
Exactly. Our diets are so varied these days that there's likelihoods that we will miss it for weeks on a time, that we won't eat a certain food that might be high in, so how does the body tell us?
There is a condition, you know, when sometimes I have had patients who tell me that they feel like they're deficient in something. There is a condition called pica, when you can eat even chalk or sand or mud or whatever, unusual things, and or just have a whole bunch of Tic Tacs or some kind of candy, and it probably the body is craving for something, and iron deficiency can do that. So people have, if you feel like you're craving for something, it's you know, when you have your physical, it's important to check if your blood levels of key nutrients are okay.
I've heard that sometimes people crave chocolate when they really need vitamin B or one of the vitamin Bs. Is that possible?
I haven't seen any study showing that.
I think
it's
people just crave
anecdotal.
Chocolate.
Well, so when we crave certain things, it may be our body telling us we need it. In some cases, it may just be our body telling us we're hungry.
It's possible. It's mm-hmm. certainly possible when your blood sugar goes down, you haven't eaten for many hours. And so you need food then to replenish the energy. So the body can say in different ways. For instance, kids, it has been a study done on kids has shown that kids who go to school without eating breakfast can get very fidgety and are not able to concentrate. And it just means that they're not getting enough glucose for their brains to function. So rather than thinking the kid needs medication to calm him down, the kid needs breakfast because there's no energy put back into this child's body after several hours of not eating. So the body can respond in different ways, and it's important to watch for the signs.
We mentioned earlier that B vitamins are water-soluble, and so if you can't overdose on them, but does that mean that we can take as much as we want because we will then satisfy our need for the Bs?
Absolutely not. It doesn't mean that you should take a lot of it, because it's not that all of it gets excreted. Some of it is stored, and there has to be a certain balance between nutrients. So if you take more of one and less of the other, or the balance is not correct, then again there is a problem in maintaining your health. So none of these supplements should be taken more than what you need, and this applies to the water soluble as well.
I mean, there's really a point where when you go to these large mega doses, you're going from dietary supplements and vitamins to taking drugs, essentially.
Well, there are three B's in music, but five B's in vitamins. What do they do? Why are they all B's? Why don't they have their own letters?
Well, the historic reasons for that. And so the B vitamins came out of the demonstration that the germ on grains, rice and other grains, were necessary to maintain health on very limited, in terms of diets that are very limited. And A had already been taken as a compound that prevented night blindness that was derived from fats. And then as chemists got a hold of this wheat germ and started trying to really purify what this factor was, what they discovered, of course, was that there's a number of these water-soluble factors that are at high concentrations in these grains.
And some people tell me that B12 is particularly important for vegetarians. Is that true?
Yes. It's probably the least available of these vitamins in terms of its plants don't synthesize it, animals don't synthesize it. You really can only get it from bacteria or animals that have taken it in from bacteria and then have it in their tissues. And plants don't use it, and so they don't have a need for it, so they don't take it out of other things. And so if you don't eat meat or dairy products, you're really not getting any through your diet.
Steve from Bronxville, you're on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Hi, pleasure to be here. My question was about vitamins. Some tout that they are derived from natural sources, and other vitamins say that they are derived, or they don't say, but I assume that they're from synthetic sources. Is there a big difference in the quality?
Well, for the most part, Probably not.
Well, citric acid, for example, some people will refuse to eat anything but rose hips or some other natural source.
Right. I think that's silly, personally. I mean, these compounds are chemicals, and you can have an animal synthesize the chemical, or you can have a lab do it. And when you purify it, you end up with the same molecule, and it has the same function. Now, there are exceptions to this. Vitamin E actually has 8 different forms, and there's one that is most important in terms of its function in the body, and the synthetic versions will have a bigger mix, and so their effectiveness will be less. But for the most part, synthesized ones versus animal-derived, they're the same compounds, ultimately.
You go along with that?
I think the best way to do it is through food, because you do get a synergy of other nutrients for its best availability and absorption.
Okay, so well, then let's follow up that question with Sarah from Manhattan. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thank you. I love your show. I have a friend who for years has been eating only uncooked food, and that way, of course, he never eats any meat or fish or dairy.
He can eat uncooked meat, you realize.
No sushi.
He wouldn't touch meat. And he's been trying to convince me for years to follow the same diet. What is your answer to that?
There is a movement on the raw food diet, and you know, the hypothesis is that it can protect you from cancers or preventing cancers from recurring. But we really don't have any research to support that. There are people who are interested and who want to study it. So until we know about it, I think when you're just eating raw food, there are a lot of nutrients that you can miss out on. Particularly the people who eat raw food are also vegans. They will not eat any animal foods, so there could be a B12 deficiency. The protein quality may not be as good. You really can't plan a diet that could be optimum without adding some fortified foods to it. So there's no research to support it, but there's something that we need to look at, I think.
Thank you for calling us. Kevin from Manhattan, you're on. Please explain.
Hello, how you guys doing today?
We're well. Go ahead.
If you work out quite a bit, exercise quite a bit, which vitamins do you lose most through that? You know, I'm talking really exercising hard, like 4 or 5 days a week.
Well, in principle, if you're eating a balanced diet and exercising, you're not going to be specifically losing vitamins and micronutrients.
Well, will he be pumping iron out of his body?
No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't be losing. Pretty much the only way you lose iron from your body is by bleeding.
I mean, uh-huh.
Or if you're pregnant, it goes to the fetus. But
if you're a weightlifter, you need a little bit more protein per kilogram body weight.
Dr. Kamali, just one more thing. At different stages of our life, we need vitamins and minerals in different quantities. Isn't that true?
That's correct.
So how do we know? Is it just a matter of using Centrum Silver when we hit a certain age?
I'm not promoting supplementation unless it's really required. I think you can get the benefit from whole foods, but there is a place for it. And I think if you are not eating dairy products and you know that you need more calcium, so you need to take a supplement. But I think each time you go to your physician or you have a nutrition professional to talk to, you can discuss your needs.
Well, what do you mean when you're saying whole foods?
I'm talking about foods, and fruits and vegetables, whole grains, rather than depending on supplements.
And a good variety of foods.
A good variety, which, you know, should be planned on with lots of plant foods, including fruits and vegetables and whole grains.
I mean, I don't think we can emphasize the value of getting micronutrients, vitamins, minerals from food more. I mean,
although kids will eat pizza and nothing else for a while, and we just have to get past that.
We top them with lots of vegetables.
We thank you both so much for being with us, Dr. Wahida Kamali and Dr. David Talmadge. We've been talking about what vitamins and minerals are, how they work, and what we need, and I hope we've explained a few things for you.
Thanks for checking out today's podcast of The Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.